I'm the dude. So that's what you call me.
Are you a virgin?
Yeah, not since I was 10.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Come out to the coast. We get together, have a few laughs.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Can I return it if it doesn't fit?
It always fits. Eventually.
Welcome back to Movie Mingle. I'm Caveman.
And I'm Maggie.
And today we are on episode 64. And we got to watch Coco.
Yeah, which is really exciting. I'm sorry, though, really quickly. 64. And we've...
64, yes.
...have 75 episodes.
Yes.
We are 11 episodes away. That just hit me really suddenly, and I was like, oh my God. 11 episodes?
And next week it'll be 10.
Oh my God.
And the
God.
Week after that it'll be 9. And it's pretty much doing a countdown now.
This is awesome.
The final countdown.
That just hit me when I was like, oh my God, 64. First of all, I'm very proud of us for having done 64 episodes. But the fact that we only have 11 left on our first season is kind of insane.
I am never upset to have to watch.
But you don't watch often.
But I don't watch often because I know I will be upset by the end of it.
Yeah. Oh, I cried so hard. This was my second time seeing this movie. The first time...
This is your second time seeing this movie ever?
Ever. Yeah.
I at least have watched it maybe half dozen times.
Really?
Yeah.
I just...
Even though it hurts, I love watching it.
See, that's
just... Doesn't hurt as much as...
When I want to cry at a movie, I'm putting on the last hour of Endgame. Or, I'm watching Pride and Prejudice or something. My ugly cry movies are different. I never think of Coco because Coco hurts a little bit too much.
Wild Robot now.
Wild Robot, fuck.
I don't think a movie has made me cry more than Wild Robot.
Yeah, is that your peak?
I think that's my peak. Cry.
I mean... I cried pretty goddamn hard at Wild Robot.
Coco's one.
Yeah.
Of course, Up and Inside Out.
Yeah. Yeah. We haven't watched Inside Out 2 yet, mainly because I'm just sort of...
Scurred.
Scurred. Yeah, a little scurred. But Coco... I don't know. Coco falls in the line of, what I feel is, the last great Pixar film for a while.
It kind of has been.
And... Pixar films at this point are really just, how do we make Maggie ugly cry and then be left so devastated that she's a shell of herself for a few hours? And I think I've mentioned this during when we talked about Up and Toy Story 3 and all those. I can't do it as much anymore, I can't cry as hard as I cried during Coco and then just go on with life and just live the rest of the day. The movies have become emotional torture porn, and I can't do it as much. Also, the quality's gone down, but still, it's hard.
It seems like whenever they do two movies in a year,
yeah.
One gets a lot of good attention, the other one kind of gets left behind. Inside Out and The Good Dinosaur came out the same year.
Yeah, but The Good Dinosaur wasn't that good.
It's fine. But once again... Before that, most Pixar movies were hit after hit after hit
yeah.
after hit. Cars 2 was the exception in the early 10. No other movie came out when Cars 2 came out. So
yeah, but we didn't need a Cars 2.
No, we did not.
I love Cars.
However, it did make almost three times its budget back, even though it was not a hit critically. Kids loved Cars 2 because kids love Nader.
Yeah.
And Nader got to be a spy.
Yeah.
And it was dumb.
It was so dumb.
Whereas, the first one adults really loved because it brought us that nostalgia.
The first
Especially
Cars.
People who know Route 66.
Shit on Cars all the time. In fact, a lady just recently in Philadelphia actually shit on a car. The Delco dumper. Adults want to hate on Cars. People always Cars is the worst Pixar movie. And I'm like, it's not. The first Cars is a perfect film. And every time fucking James Taylor is singing about Route 66 and Bonnie Hunt, forever a queen, is giving her beautiful speech, it destroys me. So, yeah, I love Cars. Pixar movies are just made to make me cry, but at a certain point now I can't do it as readily, you know. I don't want to do it as much because I just can't recover from it as quickly anymore.
Cars 3 and Coco came out the same year.
We haven't even seen Cars 3.
No. Onward and Soul came out the same year.
Both of those movies, well, that was a pandemic thing too, because they released pretty much straight to Disney Plus.
Turning Red and Lightyear were also same year releases.
Yeah, no, and both those movies, I mean, the fact that Lightyear made me cry as hard as it did. Lightyear was decent. Lightyear was a movie that should have come out 10 years earlier, but they didn't have the ability to, if that makes any sense. I enjoyed it. Turning Red was a really sweet, cute, funny little film, and I only saw it once, and I really should rewatch it because I like that one a lot. I don't think I'd ever watch Onward or Soul again. So
I'd like to watch both of those one more time and
just give them another chance.
Yeah. Sure.
I don't know. Both of those films, I was like, this at this point, it's emotionally manipulative. Like, they're doing it on purpose.
Well, like I said, Coco was released in 2017. It was directed by Lee Unkrich, who we've talked about many times.
Yeah.
Co-directed Toy Story 2, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo. He got to direct Toy Story 3 by himself, but then co-directed Coco with Adrian Molina. Adrian Molina worked for Pixar for 10 years as a punch-up screenwriter, mm-hmm. taking existing scripts and just giving them a little extra, you know, punch up the dialogue, make it sound more human, or whatever needs to be done to make it seem flow better, whatever they're looking for. So that's what he did, and him and Lee Unkrich directed Coco. It was written by Lee Unkrich as well, along with Matthew Aldrich, who wrote a film called Spinning Man from 2018 and Cleaner from 2007, but that was about it. He wrote some additional material for the Pixar film The Good Dinosaur, but that's essentially all his screenwriting. Then Jason Katz also worked on Coco. Worked as an artist for Pixar ever since Toy Story, but this is his only writing credit. So
Pixar brings in from within.
Yeah, they work within their...
I think they also wanted to have somebody Hispanic working on the direction of this film because this film is so rooted in Hispanic culture.
Yes, Lee Unkrich himself has said that he purposely hired... people with the Hispanic voice mm-hmm. who could speak about Dia de los Muertos and
the culture,
all the culture and all the music and everything. Yeah. It was it all culminates into this really beautiful story. And I mean, Mexican culture is such a beautiful culture.
I know. I just simply adore Mexico. From their food to their music to the people, like I have such
their
a
art,
idea, their artwork. I mean, I've loved Frida Kahlo for years.
The Mexican film mm-hmm. is great.
It's a fantastic culture, and living in Southern California, we got a really good love and appreciation for Hispanic culture, and I just I think it's lovely. I think it's beautiful. I very well may mispronounce some words here and there because I did not take Spanish and I'm not good at the Spanish accent.
It took Spanish a long time.
I have nothing but the highest and the deepest respect for Mexico and its people. I think it's a beautiful place and I would love to go back, but, you know, time and money, really.
It's been since 2004.
Yeah, same for me, 2004.
I went?
Yeah.
But we didn't go together.
No. Oh, did I go in 2005? Yeah, I went in 2005. I went to Switzerland in 2004. And then the same month, a year later, I was in Mexico. I was floating in the Sea of Cortez.
In San Felipe.
Yeah, just absolutely.
And it's funny that we both went to through the same town.
Yeah, San Felipe.
And then, but I had been there. That was my last trip.
Yeah.
It was through San Felipe. My previous trips were on the west coast of Baja California.
Mm-hmm.
And
I've only been to Baja. I haven't even been into like...
I haven't been to the main...
I want to go see the Yucatan so badly.
I just want
to... I want to go see the Mayan ruins. I want to go see...
I just want to go to Mexico City and get some street food.
Oh, God, I know.
That's been my Like, I just want to land, plane land,
yeah.
Step out into Mexico City,
yeah.
Spend like a solid 24, 48 hours yeah. just going through the city, eating food, digesting culture.
Well, I would say that we need to get Duolingo so that we can start working on our Spanish. But since they've decided to fire all of their human workers and replace them with AI, I don't think that particular app's going to be around that much longer. So, but, you know, there's always YouTube.
Next, the composer was Michael Giacchino.
One of our all-time favorites.
Everybody here, I think, now knows what we how we feel about yeah. Michael Giacchino.
He's the GOAT. It's we like, love him so.
Yeah, I mean, he's the music behind the Star Trek's franchise, the new Star Trek's, the new Planet of the Apes, the, you know...
Lost.
Batman.
Rogue One, for God's sakes, he directed Werewolf by Night. Like, he is just nerd extraordinaire, and we adore him to no end.
And, you know, and plus he's had, this isn't his first or last Pixar film.
Nope, he's done a ton of them.
You got The Incredibles, and we've got Ratatouille, Up, he did Cars 2, and Inside Out, and Coco, of course, that's why we're talking about him. Then he went on, and of course, he did Incredibles 2, which they're making an Incredibles 3, which is supposed to be... It has no release date yet.
Mm-hmm.
They also have not announced if Michael Giacchino or Brad Bird are coming back for it. And I'm like, if both of those guys...
Yeah, no, they're...
Or else there is no Incredibles 3 in my mind.
Also, he's doing the music for the Fantastic Four, which what snippets I've heard is fantastic. So I'm very excited. I love him so.
He also did Lightyear, which was his last Pixar film.
Yeah, that music was pretty legit. He has so many fun. Like he's really really clever with his pun names.
Yes, his pun names for his songs are great.
Always great.
Very humorous. The stuff he did for Star Trek and Star Wars.
Yeah, even though Lucasfilms insisted that the Rogue One soundtrack have normal names, he did put out the list of the goofy sort of pun titles. And I will never forget. It Takes One to Rogue One. That. It's just fucking, it makes me so excited. I mean, I'm even looking up the Coco soundtrack titles, and it's like, Will He Shoemaker, Shrine and Dash, you know, just the strum of destiny. It's all relative. Like, it's just the way that man pulls out little puns continuously cracks me up. I adore him so much. I wish I could shake his hand and just gush all over him because...
One day. Because he'll come on the show.
Oh my God, would he?
Michael Giacchino, this is an open invitation.
Yeah, we have nothing to give you but love. So
you can email us at moviemusicalpod@gmail.com.
We would love to hear from you.
Harley Jessup was the production designer. He was the production designer for 4 episodes of Sesame Street between 1973 and 1985. He also worked on James and the Giant Peach, Monsters, Inc., Ratatouille, Cars 2, and The Good Dinosaur. Yeah, production designer... Kind of similar as a cinematographer, but not really. In live action, production designer is just like dressing the scene, and not even a set dresser, like designing. They design the scene. They design how the buildings are going to look and how the scene is going to look. And when it comes to animation, production designer and a art director are kind of the two people who are like designing what the cinematography mm-hmm. of the film is going to look like.
Well, we did talk recently as I was, you know, goofy and being like, I could be a cinematographer. But we did talk recently about how, you know, cinematography and animation is always going to be perfect. Yeah. And yeah, that does come down to
your imagination, essentially.
What you can create with your director's vision,
but trying to get it instilled into the artists
and the cinematography and the art direction and the everything in this movie is breathtaking.
It's probably one of their best.
That scene where you see the City of the Dead for the first time, just
that first time was really pretty, and then like as they're traveling through it, especially with the tram going through the city, and it's just back there.
Oh, it's so fucking pretty.
And that's not just something that you, that's something that you have to go in and like design all those little buildings mm-hmm. and details in the background.
And that, that,
and then it's just in the background.
Yeah. But that still... city was based on an actual mountain city in Mexico, with all the colorful buildings kind of like built into the mountain and, you know, and kind of like all sort of stacked on top of each other. And I just, you know, and that's kind of another beautiful representation of Mexican culture is all those really colorful buildings and, you know, the kind of cluttered houses together, the streets, all of that. Like, it's just so fucking pretty. This movie is made with such love.
Another part, you know, going back to the music,
mm-hmm.
One of my favorite things that I watched not long after Coco came out
mm-hmm.
was they released this video of the Hollywood Bowl concert. They had a concert, Hollywood Bowl,
mm-hmm.
Coco did.
Yeah.
And it was all the actors, singers,
dancers
the, yeah. musicians who had worked on the film. Came in for a night and they just
put on a concert
yeah. and it was so good.
You know, I would like to rewatch that.
It was so good. I think it's on Disney Plus.
Yes, it is. They also did one of those for Encanto. And watching Stephanie Batiste, God, is that her last name? The Rosa from from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
Watching her perform that first song and just how fast she can do it was so entertaining. And then like when Luisa was singing her song about being under pressure, they had a bunch of like people in donkey costume, like donkey unicorn costumes, like dancing around her. Anyways, it's the same level of sweet and funny and beautiful.
Yeah, they put on a great show and a concert at the same time.
If you like
the music of either Coco or Encanto,
now see,
they're very, very good.
If I want to watch an animated movie that I know is going to make me ugly cry, but I feel like I can bounce back from easily, it's Encanto. That truly has become one of my favorite Disney films since it came out. I've watched it numerous times. I listen to the music a lot. Like, it's so
great
good.
Music.
I wouldn't watch Coco a lot, but I'll watch Encanto a lot. And it makes me cry almost as hard, but for different reasons. No. I wonder, too, if this movie doesn't kind of hit you in the feels because you are a father.
Well, I'm sure that's why.
I mean, obviously, like, as a mother, like, the Wild Robot just devastated me. But
the idea of one day your children could forget you.
Yeah.
Or one day everybody that ever knew you is now dead as well. So now
they're all going to forget you sometime.
The memory of you is now completely gone.
Yeah.
Unless you are lucky enough to be remembered in history mm-hmm. or famous or
art whatever. Or whatever. Yeah.
Art or, whatever it be. Literature. Well, yeah. Once every person on Earth who knew you mm-hmm. is dead.
So goes your memory.
So goes, the memory of you. And whatever you may have left on the Earth is all that's left, if you left anything on Earth.
Yeah.
And it's just it's one of those like, oh, okay. But that's like way future.
Yeah.
That's like hundreds of years.
That is weird that we have to know that.
But Coco was his daughter. Wasn't like Coco was his great-great-granddaughter.
No, Coco was his
daughter. It was his daughter. And because of him being ostracized from the family, even though it wasn't his fault, nobody knew him. Everybody who grew up after Coco never met him.
Yeah.
And so Coco was the last relative to know. Just the idea of my kids not remembering me.
Yeah, it hurts.
It does.
Fuck, like, it hurts in a special way.
When I'm gone, remember me. Rotten Tomatoes has Coco at a 97% from critics.
Yep.
Which is such a high animated, like a lot of animation doesn't get that high.
Yeah, that's impressive.
And 94% from audiences. The fact that audiences was lower than critics for an animated film is also kind of rare. Letterboxd gave it 4.1 out of 5, Metascore of 81, and an 8.4 on IMDb. which some of those are low, which is why it comes out to an average score of 88%. I think everybody's on crack, and Rotten Tomatoes had it correct.
Oh, I just pulled up like
9% difference between the average and what critics had on Rotten Tomatoes.
So I just pulled up the best 100 best computer animated movies ranked on the Tomato Meter. Toy Story 2 is at number 1 with 100%. Toy Story is number 2, if that makes any sense. Toy Story 2 is number 1. Toy Story 1 is number 2, both with 100%.
Wow.
Finding Nemo at 99, How to Train Your Dragon at 99, Inside Out at 98, Toy Story 3 at 98, Zootopia up are both at 98. Toy Story 4 is at 97.
Ew.
Oh.
No. Get out of here.
Spider-Verse, Into the Spider-Verse is at a 97. Coco's at a 97. Incredibles, The Mitchells versus the Machines are also there at 97. So I'm not going to go all the way down the list, but I will say The Wild Robot is at 96, and The Lego Movie is also at 96, and that rounds out all 15, so the top 15. So
those are a great top 15.
That's a great top 15.
Except
with
for Toy Story 4.
Yeah, which I've not watched and won't watch. I just don't care.
Don't bother. No.
Like, it should have ended at the third one.
I still
the
haven't
third
finished
it. Heartwarming, funny, and beautifully animated, Toy Story 4 manages the unlikely feat of extending and perhaps concluding a particularly perfect animated saga. That was the general consensus for Toy Story 4.
No, Toy Story 3 did a great job of ending the entire...
Yeah, but this talks about extending.
We don't need an extension.
No.
Toy Story 3 was already extending it because they were going outside Andy's house to a different owner. And you know what? Screw them.
Yeah. Well, you know, we all have our opinions and are subjective.
No, they're wrong.
I mean, the top 10, you know, being Spider-Verse, Toy Story 4, Up, Zootopia, Toy Story 3, Inside Out, How to Train Your Dragon, Finding Nemo, Toy Story, and Toy Story 2. The fact that four of those are a Toy Story film is pretty impressive. And the fact that only two of them are not Disney films.
Only two of the 15?
Of the top 10.
Oh, two of the top 10 are not.
Yeah, How to Train Your Dragon and Into the Spider-Verse.
Into the Spider-Verse, yeah. Gotcha.
What's interesting, too, is the audience score on most of these is fairly high as well. Even Toy Story 4 got a 94 popcorn bucket. I don't know what that means exactly. Coco was number 11. It also got a 94.
94 out of 100.
Yeah.
Popcorn meter.
Yeah, it was the popcorn meter is like the how the general public reacts to it, right?
Yeah, but like the popcorn bucket is like like critics get the fresh tomato.
Yeah,
audiences get a popcorn bucket. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
if it's on its side and empty and green and ugly, then it's
The Incredibles.
Terrible movie.
Got a 97% in on the tomato meter and a 75%.
Gross. Those people are gross, and they can't be on Rotten Tomatoes anymore. Anyway, we should move on because
lost in the sauce of this one.
So something interesting I want to talk about was first that Coco was made for $175 million.
It shows
pretty. That's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
$175 million. Because what was it? Iron Giant. It was less than 100.
Mm-hmm.
It might even been less than 80, but I don't remember. It's okay. But my point is, 175 is a lot of money. But it's interesting that it got the same budget as Cars 3, which was kind of like that we just released Cars 2, and it was critically not favored.
No, it was a bit of a flop. Well, it wasn't
a flop.
No, it was critically a flop.
Critically a flop, but financially did very well.
Yeah.
But it wasn't enough of, like, they put $200 million into Cars 2.
Yeah.
And then dropped that down to 175 for Cars 3.
Mm-hmm.
Before Cars 3 was Finding Dory. Finding Dory got $200 million.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also a sequel and a sure thing, pretty much.
Yeah.
Give it $200 million.
Yeah.
So before that, we have The Good Dinosaur, which is not an original... which was an original idea for Pixar, and got at least $187.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
So in between 175 and 200, it was like right in the middle. After Coco, Incredibles 2 got $200 million.
Mm-hmm.
Toy Story 4 got $200 million. And even Onward, which was an original idea and not a sequel like Toy Story 4 and Incredibles 2, also got $200 million. And so Coco and Cars 3 are over here all by, you know, Coco gets the same budget as a movie about a car. And both at $175. And I'm like, why? I wonder why they didn't give Coco that extra $25. I know that Coco has they're not spending as much on the cast.
Yeah.
That's for sure, because on, you know, Incredibles 2 and Finding Dory and Cars 3.
Yeah.
You are.
And Onward. And I mean, and a lot of these have
Toy
big
Story
name
4,
casts.
They have big name casts. But it's also, it's just the Good Dinosaur got more. And voices, right?
I mean, I can't speak for how the financial office at Pixar works. I guess that would be a good question for them. We could just call them up and ask, hey, we have a podcast. We have a question for you. I wonder if maybe it's not that they're given a budget. Maybe they're given a budget that they're like, look, you can have up to this much money to make this. Like, say they went to Coco and they said, hey, Lee, you have up to $200 million to make this. If you can make it for less and make it great, then fantastic. Please do that. But if you can't, you know, I wonder if it's more of a see how much it takes and then it gets the budget versus here's your set budget and you have to adhere to it. Like,
I can
most
see them
movies,
getting a set budget and having to
adhere to it.
Adhere
I
to
don't
it
know. Maybe
for
it's,
animation.
Maybe it's a you have a set budget, but if you can make it for less, that's great.
Some
it's hard to say why. I mean, we would have to ask Lee or the financial office, the CFO of Pixar, and be like, how does it break down there? You know, why did The Good Dinosaur get this much and Coco got that much or whatever? Like, is it the cast? Is it, you know, it's kind of hard. It's hard to say.
Well, yeah, I'm not trying to point my finger at being like,
how dare you?
Why didn't you get Coco more money?
I never thought of it in that aspect. Like, you're very curious and you're like, well, why? And
yeah, it's just like all the movies before it and all the movies after it are getting 200.
But
with
look
the exception
at what,
of The Good Dinosaur.
Look at what this movie did versus some of the other movies that got more of a budget.
And that's what I wanted to say. Like, it made only 210 domestically, which is a lot.
Yeah,
that's great.
Dollars? Just $210?
Yes, $210.
Oh, wow.
No, $210 million, and then it did $604 million internationally.
Dude, it is one of the highest grossing films in Mexico of all time.
And then,
yeah,
this movie came out in 2017, and we've had a lot of conversations about these other movies that came out like between 2000 and 2010,
mm-hmm.
when DVD and Blu-ray sales were like really...
Yeah, they were there.
And now that... And then we got, you know, the closer you get to the 2020s, it started to fade down. And obviously COVID and the rise or the force of the rise of streaming services mm-hmm. really has killed the physical media.
Which, I mean, again, is a fucking shame, because if they take it off of streaming and you don't have a physical copy, you can't watch it. You
can't watch it anymore.
Like, and the physical copy, I mean, what is a DVD these days? Like, 30
oh,
bucks. What does a banana cost these
days? Did you say 30?
Yeah. I gotta imagine, right? They're probably in the $30 range, most like Blu-rays or DVDs.
A DVD is like $10.
Yeah. Okay, so Blu-ray. You know,
and most now they finally stopped putting DVDs in with Blu-rays.
Yeah.
Now it's either Blu-ray by itself or Blu-ray 4K.
Yeah.
Combo. 4K is usually close, like 28.
Yeah.
Blu-ray is only 25 or less, sometimes 20.
Yeah.
Like, they're still pretty cheap.
I just think if you love the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Buy the fucking
movie.
Yeah. Like, don't buy it on streaming.
You're just like, I'll just watch it when it's streaming.
Yeah, or I'll just buy it on streaming, which is something else I don't trust. Like, you know, we've got a particular, you know, library of streaming movies that we own on Amazon, but, like, do we get to keep those forever?
Yeah,
are those going to disappear one day?
Just because, like, I paid for them, I don't believe that they belong to me. Like, same thing with, I don't think it's on the new Xbox, but on the old Xbox, I have movies on the hard drive
mm-hmm.
of that Xbox. It's not through a streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the hard drive. And I paid for those movies.
Yeah.
But they're only on that hard drive now.
Yeah.
And if that hard drive goes, those movies are gone.
Yeah.
It made an extra $86 million in home media sales.
Damn. Yeah, of course it did. I mean, this movie made money.
$900 million.
Yeah.
Total. Yeah, just shy of a billion. And that is fantastic for a Pixar film based around a non-American culture. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Which I, then, again, goes to prove that if you tell stories that are not from the point of view of cis white American men, they will make money.
Cis white American men will not go see those movies.
You did.
Oh, wait. Damn it.
Caught me. But, you know, look at how much money Black Panther made. Look at how much money Sinners is making right now. I mean, Everybody deserves to see themselves as the hero of a movie or of a film. Every culture, every person deserves to see themselves on that big screen and think, that person looks like me, that person sounds like me, I could be that hero. And you see it time and time and time again with Wonder Woman, with Moana, with
Barbie,
with, you know, all of these different films that are not just cis white American men. And yet every time they make money, people are like, oh, well, look at how much money it's. Isn't this a shock? Blah, 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 blah. I mean, people are upset about...
Here's the sequel, and then they make it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And they got the wrong point.
People are
they learned the
off,
wrong lesson.
People are upset about how much... I want to say Raylan Givens. I know
Raylan Coogler?
Thank you. Everybody is so, like, up in arms, or there's a certain aspect of the internet that's so up in arms about Ryan Coogler and how much he's making and the deal that he got for Sinners. He's not the first director to get that deal, but everybody's all of a sudden upset that he's getting it because he's a black man. This man has made over $2 billion for the global box office.
They're acting as if he got it because he's a black man.
Yeah.
Even though he got it because he made...
He's an incredible filmmaker who makes great movies.
He made Disney $1 billion.
Yeah, that's a couple billion. He's made Disney a couple billion.
That's true because Wakanda Forever also made...
Yeah, a lot of money.
And Creed made a lot of money.
Yeah. By the way,
But this is a director who has consistently shown that he can make a
great film.
A great film. So when it came to Sinners, it being not a huge Marvel franchise movie... Or based off of another franchise.
It was a wonderful, it was an original idea.
So of course it was easy for the studio to be like, sure, here's some money. Yeah. You're a great director. Thanks for making those studios a lot of money.
Yeah, make us a lot of money.
And he is. And he's like, well, I want this deal. And they're like, eh, fine, because it's a little vampire movie.
Which, by the way, I was listening to the Shutter Island episode, and in that particular episode, I was talking about how, like, oh, God, fine. I guess I'll go see Sinners. Like, it's not really my thing, but I'll go see it. We'll see if I saw it, and I fucking loved it. I fucking loved it. That movie is incredible. It's flawless, and we have to do a bonus episode on it when it comes out. That film is so goddamn good. And, yeah, I watched the trailer and went, nah. Absolutely not. But it took my lovely husband going, I know you and I know you'll love this. And it took enough of my friends being like, this movie's amazing, for me to go, fine, I'll go see it. And then I walked out of that theater just floating. Like, that was one of the greatest films I've ever seen on the big screen.
Such a good time.
I'm
so glad I saw it twice, and I'm glad I got to see it both times in IMAX.
Yeah. And I can't wait to see it again.
This was great.
Because I feel like I missed a lot, but fuck, that movie.
Definitely
Michael B. Jordan.
That on 4K.
Oh, God, yeah, we are.
So Coco stars, first Anthony Gonzalez plays Miguel, our main character, our protagonist who's...
Oh, he's such a sweet little boy.
Who just wants to play his guitar.
He just wants to play music.
And be like his hero, another guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, his family, but especially his grandmother, is very anti-music because her grandmother...
Mm-hmm.
Hated music.
Yes.
The one who started it all, because her husband
left the family to be a musician.
Left her alone with a daughter. She decided, fuck that. I'm gonna learn how to make shoes and then start my own business because it's become successful, and you know, ropes the whole family into it, down to her great great grandson.
I absolutely love that the background of the story is told through the Papel Picado, which is those really colorful paper banners that you see hanging up during Mexican celebrations. And so when we learn about, you know, Mama Imelda and baby Coco being left by, you know, the father,
yes,
it's all told through those paper decorations.
Paper mache, but not really mache.
No, it's not mache. They're like paper flags that are like, it's like when you cut a snowflake out of paper,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
you
yeah.
fold it
that's
and
right.
cut it.
That's the
yeah.
one. It's and, like folding paper and cutting it and
yes.
making the...
And they're called papel picado, which again, I will probably be butchering. I took German for 2 years in high school and it has helped me none. Nine.
Not even... Switzerland?
Everyone in Switzerland speaks English, and I only had two very stilted conversations with people that didn't speak English, one of them being Jesse's granddad, and the other one being a woman in a shop, and I managed to get through both of them with my very limited German, and their very limited English. So, I mean, most of the time, granddad and I would either talk through Jesse's mom, mm-hmm. or Jesse, or he would, like, shuffle up to me and point and go, I am hungry. And I'd be like, ah, so good, Grandpa, so good, Papa. Like, you know, great job. Or I would speak very limited German to him, and he'd be like, ha, ha, ha. He was a very sweet man. But yeah, no, I learning German has helped me nine. That's not even the correct way to
I
say
know.
It.
I was like, learning German has helped me no. okay.
None whatsoever.
All right. That's very obvious. But no, I do know that, like, you may not speak it much, but I know that when somebody's speaking it,
I can hear it.
You can hear
than I can speak
words
it.
Being spoken and be like, oh, I know what he said.
Yeah.
Basically.
Which
maybe
is
not
weird.
Word to word, but you know what the sentence contains.
Yeah. And that's kind of how my ear for languages works, because I'm not great at other languages. Some people are. I'm not. I've tried to go back and relearn German. I have dabbled a little bit with Spanish. I should have. The only reason I didn't take Spanish in high school is because our Spanish teacher was a cunt. And people ahead of time were like, she sucks. She is a straight up monster. And I was like, well, I'm not doing that. To myself. If she had been a nicer teacher, I probably would have taken Spanish, but she was absolutely horrific. And I never really liked the idea of French, and both my brothers took German, so that's why I took German. I do regret it. I feel like Spanish would have helped me a lot more, but, you know, here we are.
Yeah, I took Spanish in elementary school, which...
I mean, that's the time to learn another language, is when
right.
your brain is soft and squishy.
Which is funny, because kids now don't seem to be learning... other languages until high school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, our kids, the first opportunity was high school.
Yeah, that's kind of typically the way to do it, though. That's how it's
done.
Well,
I know, but I was in elementary school when I started learning, like fourth grade.
Yeah,
my first Spanish.
You also went to a Christian school in Southern California.
I guess they're more advanced than public schools.
That, or they just wanted you to learn the language so they could send you on missions down there.
Oh, no, that's absolutely fine. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
They're like, you need to spread the word to these poor folk
down there.
So
who already
it's a very Christian culture.
Yeah, it's very Christian culture.
You know.
But not our God.
No,
like our Christian God is different.
Because he's white, blue eyes, and blonde hair. That's our Christian God. Anyways, back to the young man, Anthony Gonzalez,
yes,
who played
Anthony
Miguel.
Gonzalez.
He hasn't done a lot of other things.
No. He was absolutely a hoot to see on that
the live
Hollywood
action
Bowl
thing.
Live,
didn't
yeah, that
they have
live
his
performance.
Brother come in and perform the songs? Because he had already, or was he the brother? I remember there's a story, and forgive me for not knowing it correctly off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure at the Hollywood Bowl, his brother is the one who's singing all of Miguel's songs, because at that point, Anthony had gone through puberty and couldn't get the lower, you know, the higher range anymore. So I think that it's his little brother that actually performs those songs.
Well, he nailed it just as good as his brother did, because runs in the family.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Hold yeah, on. He's had bit parts on TV shows, movies, even some video games. Just he's a little kid actor that, that's probably not even little anymore.
No.
He's probably...
He is a very, you know, he's not a grown-ass man, because he's still, he's 20 years old. Oh, my God, he's still an infant.
He is 20 years old. he can't even drink yet.
It looks like he has, he might also be working on his own original music and whatnot, because he's got an Instagram post from 2 weeks ago about his, has some songs that he's got coming out. So I'll definitely check him out. He's a very handsome young man. He is a young man. He is a child at 20.
At 20, he's still baby. Next we have Gael Garcia Bernal.
Oh my God. And to quote Roger from American Dad, you wouldn't let me get that Gael Garcia Bernal poster. He has green eyes and he's Latin. I need it. this man is an incredible actor and he is so handsome. And I haven't seen a lot of his stuff.
I haven't seen a lot. Of course, we saw
Werewolf by Night. Yeah, which he was delightful in. And I would love to see more of that character.
Jack Russell or the werewolf.
Jack Russell's such a Like, it totally makes sense that they would name their werewolf character Jack Russell.
In a comic book.
Yeah. But when you kind of, like...
When it comes to reality into a film with actual, like, drama.
Really?
And this guy's name is Jack Russell.
Really? But I want to see Jack Russell and Mark Spector and Pedro and Reed Richards all kind of hang out with each other. I want to see...
So random.
Yeah.
All the random characters.
Well, no, because I want to see all the Hispanic Marvel actors
You want what you get to see in Disney Dreamland, where these random people are just like I want congregating that so in the corner.
Like, while the Beast and Mother Gothel and Wally are hanging out, and I'm running by with R2-D2 following me. Like, yeah. But look, they're all Marvel characters. They're all Hispanic actors. It's important and beautiful that they're all there, and I want to see them together. I don't get to see fucking Poe Dameron and Din Djarin and Cassian Andor together in Star Wars as much as I want to see a scene with all three of those men together. I don't get to. So... Give it to me, Marvel. Gael famously was in Y tu mama también, which I remember watching and being like, oh, I'm going to see something hot. And then I watched it and I was like, this was not that hot. I wasn't 100% sure. Like, everybody's like, oh, the threesome in that movie. And I'm like, did I miss it? Did I just, like, fall asleep during that part? I might have to rewatch it.
I think he's most notably probably for Mozart in the Jungle.
That was a big hit. And I never watched it.
Big hit.
He did do a couple...
I mean, 4 years of television he was on.
It was on Prime, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He did do a couple, like, rom-coms. Like, he's in one with Kate Hudson called A Little Bit of Heaven, which I would be curious to watch just for him because he is so cute and so sweet. You know, he's a great actor. He was in Old as well, which you saw, right?
I keep seeing it, and I think I started it once
and never got around to the twist. Asleep.
Yeah, I didn't watch it.
Yeah,
but, it's on my list, but it's kind of
You watch The Mother, that Jennifer Lopez, like, action film on Netflix? Because apparently he was in that, too.
The Mother. No, I did not watch that one either.
He's in a film coming out sometime this year called Holland with Nicole Kidman and Matthew McFadden. I'm going to have to watch that film for the cast alone because, goddamn. Apparently it's an American psychological thriller about a woman's picture-perfect life in quaint Holland, Michigan, as it crumbles around her. But, I mean, Nicole Kidman, Matthew McFadden, and Gael Garcia Bernal, like, sign a girl up. Oh, my God. Even though I don't care much for Nicole Kidman anymore. I don't know. She's just sort of there all the time. But Matthew McFadden, forever my love.
Next, we've got Benjamin Bratt.
I adore Benjamin Bratt so much. I think he is just so... Darling, I have always loved him.
I mean, his Law and Order years.
Yeah, his Law and Order years were great.
Traffic was a massive film.
Honestly, he was fantastic in Doctor Strange, and they just let that die.
Yeah,
like
they did. Oh, man, could you imagine if he just randomly comes back somehow?
Well, I mean, technically, I guess What's-His-Face took his power from him.
Took his power away.
But I would like to see him come back.
But he didn't die.
No.
And somebody could give him his power back, mm-hmm. or an alternate version of that character comes back. Not that he will. Just
no,
saying.
You never know.
They just the random past characters. They're just like, you get to be
in
this.
And here's this person. You're like, oh my god.
Oh yeah.
That yeah. Benjamin Bratt is great. So, Caveman.
Yes.
Who plays Bail Organa in Star Wars?
Jimmy Smits.
Yes.
Yeah.
But Jimmy Smits was unable to reprise his role in season 2 of Andor, so they replaced him with Benjamin Bratt. And that little scene, spoilers for Andor, in the most, or in the last set of episodes, where fucking Luthen and his psycho lady partner, whose name I don't know, but she's incredible, when they meet up with Bail Organa on Coruscant for a brief second, I did not recognize that that was Benjamin Bratt and not Jimmy Smits. I was just like, all I saw was Bail Organa.
Maggie.
Look, it's not... I saw nothing other than Bail Organa.
Jimmy Smits looks completely different.
I think they look kind of similar.
So does Benicio del Toro and Javier Bardem.
You do not get to... It's not... Don't you dare do this to me, sir. I adore both of those men, but I adore Bail Organa more. So when I watched it, all I saw was Bail Organa. And I was like, oh my God, he's here for a second. Where's Leia? And then afterwards, I was like, wait a minute. That was Benjamin Bratt. Like, it took me a second because all I saw was the character and not the actor, sir. Don't come at me like this. Don't make me sound like this on the internet. I can't financially recover from that. Did you realize that it was...
I did not in the moment realize that that was supposed to be...
Ha ha!
I did not realize that was supposed to be Bail Organa.
Oh! You didn't?
No.
They literally were like, Senator Organa. And no, he was just like, hey, what's up?
I just saw Benjamin Bratt. I was paying. He came on screen. And I was like, "Hey, that's Benjamin Bratt."
And he came on screen, and I was like, "That's Bail Organa."
Ever since episode one of season two, I've been thinking to myself, "When is Jimmy Smits gonna show up?"
He's not.
Because I was like, he's in the world right now. Yeah, still,
but he's a busy man, and they were scheduling difficulties.
And I didn't know that, and I was hoping that he'd make an appearance.
But when they showed the reason they showed that little set moment with Bail Organa was to get people kind of prepared because he has apparently he has a bigger arc for the rest of the season. Right, we get to see more
I need
of Bail
to go
Organa
because I don't think I was listening to anything that was happening. I was just like, oh, it's
Benjamin Bratt.
Benjamin Bratt.
Anyways, I personally was like, oh. It's Bail and not the actor playing it. And then, like, I saw, like, TikToks and things afterwards where I was like, wait, that was a different actor? Because I just saw the character. As for the Benicio del Toro and Javier Bardem thing, they look and sound too similar, so don't come at me. And, you know, but if you don't understand
the
difference...
To me, Benicio del Toro just looks completely different. Sure, there might be different movies that they've done with makeup that maybe made them look a little bit more.
I can't tell you why they're just the same person in my head. But that's the same with Dylan McDermott and Dermot Maroney. Like, it all stems from that SNL sketch.
Well, I can tell their faces apart, too. But
for the most part,
matching the name with the guy
yeah,
is harder.
Yeah, it's sometimes hard.
That one's harder.
Yes, and sometimes it's hard for me to match the name with the guy when I'm looking at Benicio del Toro and Javier Bardem.
Okay, I'll give you that. I will say... when it comes to Dermot Maroney and Dylan McDermott, I know what both men look like, but I probably mess up which name went to...
Which one is which?
Yeah.
Benjamin Bratt, we love you. In Andor, out of Andor, no matter what you do, we love you. So
he's really funny in Miss Congeniality.
Great. Haven't seen that
You've
movie?
Never seen it? Oh my God.
In
Why do we
so
always...
long.
Oh, in so long. Okay, so you have seen
I've
it
I've seen
once.
It once.
And you loved it.
I enjoyed it
okay.
at the time, I think, because I saw it once, probably around 2001.
Wow.
So, if that's what you want to watch tonight, I'm totally down.
Oh, it's so much fun.
Look,
Somebody
came up to me the other day and was like, it's April 25th. You know what that means, right? And I was like, yes, unfortunately, I do. Because of the pop culture-ness of it all. But I haven't seen that movie in a very long time. So. He was also in Catwoman, which is a giant piece of shit.
So. You and I were just talking about Bill Pullman.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were watching...
Spaceballs. Yeah.
And
we have just watched Lewis Pullman in Thunderbolts.
Yes.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite... Chick flicks mm-hmm. is
While You Were Sleeping. Another film I haven't
Bill
seen
Pullman.
In 20 years easily.
But of course, the other reason I like that movie is because I really had a huge crush on her forever. And so I think that's another reason I love Miss Congeniality. But, well, not maybe. Yes, that is another reason.
I really love Sandra Bullock, too. There was a while there where she was in a few too many like rom-coms, and I was just like, meh, you know. And also, when it came out in 2000, I was a kid. I didn't have a car, and we lived 40 minutes from the movie theater. We didn't exactly go see every film.
She's just She's good in them,
but
though.
She's great. No, I'm like, not saying 2 weeks notice. 2 weeks notice is one of my favorite rom-coms of all time. It's so fucking stupid, and it makes me endlessly happy, even though there's a Trump cameo. Like, I love 2 weeks notice. Also, that Lost City of Gold one that she did with Channing Tatum not too long ago,
fun,
was a,
it was a
riot.
Lot of fun.
That movie was great.
Fun and funny.
Fucking Daniel Radcliffe had the time of his life in that film. I love Channing Tatum when he plays a himbo. That should be the only thing he ever does. Is just
him
playing...
and John Cena.
Yeah,
play that.
They should play the dumb himbo
they
all
play
the
those
time.
Great.
Because when you see them in anything else, it's sort of, well, not John Cena. I adore John Cena no matter what. But sometimes Channing Tatum is a little like, he tries for dramatic roles, and I'm like, meh, that's not your,
it's not your,
that's not your forte there, buddy.
But when he's kind of like a dumb.
Yeah, when he's a himbo, it's great.
Moving right along, we've got Alana Ubach.
Plays Mama Imelda.
Mama Imelda.
Who does, she's the skeleton of his great-grandma?
Two greats, I believe, because his grandmother is the one with...
Yeah, who runs around,
Her grandmother.
Yeah, so yeah, his great-great-grandmother.
Great-great-grandmother is played by Alana Ubach.
And she's fantastic. I don't know. They got a lot of, obviously they got that entire cast of Hispanic
14
actors.
Episodes on Euphoria, and I haven't watched that personally, Ooh. But have heard nothing but great things.
Oh, wait. I think I know who this woman is. Oh, I know exactly who this woman is. You know, in Waiting, the waitress that's all sugarly sweet to the face of the customers and in the back is swearing up a storm. Yeah. That was my personal waiting style when I was a server. Like, I'd be like, oh my God, like, tables, you're so nice. I love you. Everything's great. And in the kitchen, I was like, fucking, where the fuck is my fucking pasta?
Yeah, that character is great.
I do know this actress. She's been in Ted. She was in Legally Blonde. She was in Sister Act 2. She's one of those great Spoilers. Character actresses.
She just happens to also be in last night's The Last of Us.
Oh.
And next week's as well.
Well, and we haven't watched those yet, so excellent. But she is, just a fantastic character actress. I love the character of Mama Imelda. I think that I love her arc too, because, you know, she had her heart broken when her husband left her to go play music and he never came back. Right. But then when she realizes the story, and even when she tries to start, like, saving Hector, and, you know, she tells Ernesto, like, don't you touch him. He's the love of my life. And Hector's like, what did you say? And she's like, nothing. This actress, I'm always happy to see her in things. And she is a lovely character actress.
Renee Victor plays Abuelita, which is Spanish for grandmother, I believe.
Abuelita.
She was in 22 episodes of Weeds with, it's Renee Victor. I mean, she's, if you saw a picture of her,
I'm looking at her now, yeah.
It's a very familiar face.
They've got a lot of really wonderful Hispanic character actors to voice.
Yeah, people who've been working in the business
for years.
To people who just started, like, it's a...
Oh, she was in The Prophecy 2, and The Prophecy 1 is one of my favorite awful awesome films.
Even Gabriel Iglesias is in this.
Cheech Marin small part, so does Edward James Olmos.
Yeah, a lot of...
My favorite memory, one of my favorite Disney memories, was when we went to the... What do they call it? It's like the Celebration of the Lights or something around Christmas time, where on Main Street in Disneyland, they have... a celebrity guest come out and basically read the story of the nativity, right? Like, read the story of the birth of Jesus. And there's choirs and there's candles, and it's a really beautiful, you know, Disney production. Weirdly, obviously, Christian, but still, it's this really beautiful thing that they do at Disneyland every year around Christmas time. And the one time we went, Edward James Olmos was the celebrity guest.
Yep.
And that was really fucking cool. And he did a great job.
Great job.
Yeah. And they never say, too, who the guest is going to be. It's just they show up eventually. Like you're sitting there like, oh, who's it going to be? It could be anyone. And then I watched.
Ladies and gentlemen, Edward James Olmos.
And then he came out and started having us chant the Battlestar Galactica So Say Us All, or so whatever that phrase is. Yeah,
what they say to each other.
Yeah, but it was a very sweet moment. And I'll never forget that. That was when the kids were very young, and it was a cold December day, and we were at Disneyland, and we were there, and it was beautiful. I think it was a little rainy too. Like, it was lovely. John Ratzenberger does have a very small one-line part in this film. I believe the one word is gracias. And the cast is just chock full of great people.
Well, somebody that I wanted to talk about, Natalia Cordova Buckley, she played Frida Kahlo.
Yes.
And she also played one of my favorite characters from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Yo-Yo Rodriguez.
Oh, yeah.
She she reminds me a lot of from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Rosa Diaz.
Yeah. Like her energy,
mm-hmm.
Especially as Yo-Yo.
Her take no shit attitude. Yeah. I haven't rewatched S.H.I.E.L.D. in a very long time, but I do remember her character being a lot of fun. Wasn't she fast? What was her superpower?
She's as fast as the Flash,
mm-hmm.
but her kind of back. It's a good and a bad thing. There are times where people took advantage and found her weakness, because she can go a distance forward,
mm-hmm.
like in an instant, but she's always has to go back to where she started.
Gotcha.
Like a yo-yo.
Yeah, like a yo-yo. Gotcha. And
so sometimes people take advantage of that by them knowing she has to come back and then hitting her, mm-hmm. or whatever, or stabbing her, shooting her. But then there are other things that she can do that are like go into something real fast to
mm-hmm.
do something and be able to get out in time without dying. So it was, but it was less about her power that made her cool and more about just her general attitude and the way
she
take charge, take no shit kind of attitude.
I adore Frida Kahlo. I adore her art. In fact, we have a wood version of one of her paintings hanging up in our kitchen right now. It's Frida with lovebirds, self-portrait with lovebirds or whatever it's called. I don't know the name of the actual painting offhand, but it's been hanging up in our kitchen forever. When I was in high school, I think when my junior, it was whenever Frida, the movie, was about to come out, I was visiting my dad, and he took me to the Seattle Art Museum, and there was a entire exhibit of Frida Kahlo paintings there. And walking through that exhibit was one of the most incredible things. Seeing those paintings in person, seeing the color, seeing the emotion, just kind of took my breath away. And up until that point, up until that, the trailer for that movie, I really didn't know much about the woman, and learning about her life through that exhibit and then watching the movie was really something special for me. I love Frida, the movie itself. Salma Hayek does an incredible job. I love the soundtrack. Like, that movie is awesome.
I have never seen that.
What?
So.
Well, now I know what I get to make you watch. Because it's a great film. Like, it, in terms of how it should, in her life, it's problematic, and her husband was problematic. And, there's a lot of, crazy stuff around her existence and the accident that she suffers as a young woman that tortured her for the rest of her life and her bisexuality and all that. Like, it's a crazy good story. And they did a really, really good job with that movie. And I don't think it got enough acclaim. It got plenty of acclaim, but I felt like it deserved more. But Salma Hayek fucking murders that role. And the soundtrack is so good. Burn It Blue, motherfucker. It's so good. Well, now I know what I'm making you watch.
Great.
Yeah. I say this, having seen most Disney films, and I am not talking about Disney animal characters that are anthropomorphic, so not the ones that can walk and talk. Purely when it comes to animal sidekicks, Dante is in the top five of all Disney films. Pascal and Max from Rapunzel,
Pascal especially.
Like, Dante.
I mean, Max is a great horse, but
Max is Max is fucking great. If they were to come out and be like, Max is actually a human being that was cursed and turned into a horse, it would make sense, because that motherfucker is insane.
But I'd also be disappointed by that.
A little bit, yeah, because his own special character.
Just being a horse.
Yeah, but Dante is one of my favorite animal. I mean, Pua and the fucking, what's the chicken's name? Hey Hey?
Hey Hey, yeah.
Yeah, from Moana, like Belle's horse, Philippe. But like, I love the Disney animal sidekick, but Dante is up there near the top of my favorite. That actual dog breed does exist. I showed you some pictures of it the other day. That's sort of like, they're very hairless, except for a little bit of hair on the top of their head. They have bad dental genes, so their teeth kind of rot out a lot, and their tongues hang out a lot, which is why he's so like slobbery.
And his tongue is just wrapped around his head.
Yeah. Dante, he cracked me up the entire time. I love that character. And I love that they give, you know, they always give the kid like an animal sidekick who is much more than an animal. But, you know, it's nice to have. And yeah. I think that I loved his character.
Yeah, he's a great sidekick. Great.
He's also a spirit guide.
Well, and that's great. I love that Dante got to, because of him helping
I think
Miguel.
He always was the spirit guide.
So?
I think that, that was the, it.
I thought grandmother's beast turned it into, or in that, either turned him into the spirit guide, or in that moment he like
released the inner power or something.
But
how could Dante pass into the land of the dead having not been a spirit guide? I think he always was Miguel's spirit guide, but it was just that he was derpy, right? Because he's a street dog, you know?
Sure.
Don't name the street dogs, they'll never go away. He was there to lead Miguel on his spiritual quest, even though I think Dante himself didn't know it. I don't think Dante himself knows that he is a spirit guide, but he is. And with his little derpy wings, like, oh, he's so cute. I was in love with Dante the entire film. I thought he was just so much fun. But I always assumed he was always the spirit guide, because how else could he pass through the land of the dead?
How long, Maggie, do you think you could go without listening to any music at all? Like, you just have to be deprived of it for X amount of time.
Can I sing?
I guess you could.
Because you can't take the songs out of my head.
Do you think his grandmother would have hit him if he started singing?
But she was. Every time he tried to play music.
Well, play on a guitar, but I'm just talking about singing.
Like, just sitting there,
acapella.
Like, singing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that also wasn't. I'm sure even
so
whistling
I would say,
wasn't.
Yeah, I would say under.
Because you get
these...
that montage where she's like, no music, even she's
true.
Yelling at, like, the pizza car driving by,
oh,
and the musician,
true.
Or the drunk guys outside.
So any music whatsoever. So we're going house rules.
Yeah.
You get in trouble in some way if you, I'm just wondering how long.
45 minutes? Music's a huge part of my life, and you know that.
Oh, yeah.
I wake up singing. Sometimes I'm trying to fall asleep, Taylor Swift is on a...
No, I don't.
No, yeah, fucking you're sitting in front of a giant vinyl collection. I don't... What about you? Because I don't think I could go longer than... I would start singing to myself within 45 minutes, and I would get hit by a chancla.
Well,
easily.
Let me put it this way. At work,
There
have been multiple times where, because they buy cheap parts, parts on our radio system go out, and so there have been times where there's no music in the morning. My 5 to 8 a.m. shift is just quiet, but people can't stand being in that kind of quietness, especially in public, maybe in their bed or in the privacy of their own home, or, you know, being alone. But in a work environment, when you're working, you really desperately want some music. And so we would all start humming or singing our own songs or playing music on our phone next to us. And finally, one of my coworkers brought in
a really
good Bluetooth speaker so that the entire building could hear the music. And it just made, I mean, that was like, as soon as he did that, we're just like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, that would have driven me crazy. I am always singing to myself at work. I'm walking around. I'm walking around singing to myself. If it is not my music on the radio, I'm singing to myself, or I'm singing along with whatever the music is. Sometimes there is no music at my job. Like, nobody takes over the radio for a certain amount of time. And that silence is nice. Because, like, sometimes you need it, right? You have a headache or whatever.
Of course. I've had many a morning where I drive my 20-minute commute to work in complete silence.
Yeah, and sometimes
and
it's...
The noise of the road is essentially my white noise.
Sometimes on my commute home, I don't put my headphones on and I just listen to the world around me.
Yeah.
But those are rare. like, when I was serving, which is funny that I've talked about it a lot on this podcast, but when I was serving and, like, rolling silverware, like my 60 to 100 rolls every day, I would be standing at the little setup, like, singing Hamilton songs to myself. You know, always it was always satisfied. It was always satisfied. I was raised in a home that put music first. I could not... If somebody came up to me and said... Music is banned from your life. You can no longer sing. If you start singing to yourself, you're in trouble. 45 minutes and I'm fucked. And that's at most. So I just couldn't do it. I couldn't live in that. Where I would be Miguel out there in Mariachi Plaza, which, by the way, is there any music more joyful than mariachi music? We went to our children's, one of our child's multicultural night at their middle school the other day. And first of all, my middle school would have never put something on like that on.
No.
Absolutely not.
Especially mine, because it was there was no different cultures.
No, it was just white Christians.
All just white Christians, yeah.
Your multicultural night was like the birth of Jesus. But we were at this multicultural night. There was a ton of great food. From all over the world.
Oh,
there were
good food.
You know, there were dances from Pacific Islanders. There was dances from a little girl who is from the Philippines. And then they brought on a mariachi band. And it was just so much fun. And, like, it was, you know, it was a five-piece mariachi band. But
seeing
still,
them, seeing them show up, in, seeing them show up with dressed
great costumes,
from head to toe.
Those pure white shoes.
Beautiful shoes. Like, the details going down their pants and shirts. The instruments, like two violins.
That bass guitar.
That bass guitar, which I love the way those things are shaped.
A trumpet and another guitar.
A trumpet and a, just a, like a basic guitar.
And every acoustic. Single one of those people got to go up and sing. In fact, they were kind of holding off on the one of the violin players because she sang like an angel.
Yeah, she was the shortest, tiniest of the five of them.
Yeah, and she walked up to the mic and just blew away.
Like, I think she was the loudest of the five of them.
And it
louder
was,
than the trumpet.
And you and I were just sitting there like, yay, clapping along, singing along, just having the time of our lives. Meanwhile, our child sitting next to us with his headphones on, just ignoring everything in the world.
Ignoring everything.
Because he's in middle school and middle schoolers suck.
He's
but
got feelings.
Yeah. But like, it was just great. I love mariachi music. And I just, anytime. Yeah. I'm wandering through town and there's a mariachi band. You stop and you listen to it. It's just pure joy for me. And if I lived in that world, if I lived in Santa Cecilia, right? Santa Cecilia, I think is the name of the town. I would have been in Mariachi Plaza getting in trouble by my abuelita because it's throwing a chancla in my head. Now go get my shoe.
I love that. Go get my shoe.
I absolutely adore. And it goes back to just loving Hispanic culture and Mexican culture. One of the things that this movie touches on that kind of hurts my soul a lot is that although I have heard a lot of stories about my ancestors, I don't know a lot about my ancestors. As a white mutt, right, we're a mixture of all things and nothing. You know, I know that my last name has German heritage. I know that there's some French Canadian there. I know there's some Scottish and Irish. And I know that my grandmother, my mamu, on my mom's side, was half Mexican. And she was given up for adoption because when she was born, because, you know, I don't think the birth was, I don't fully know the story, but she was given up for adoption. She was adopted by a white couple. She was white passing, and her Mexican side was just not addressed, not acknowledged, in no way was it addressed. Which then makes my mom a quarter Mexican, and I'm as white as a lily. I am so fucking, I burn the second I see the sun. But, you know, maybe I would like to think that maybe there's a little bit of that love for that culture that's in my veins, right? That want for ancestral bond. But that's the other thing too, is I want a bond with my ancestors. I don't feel like I have it the way that other cultures and other families do. You know,
I'm extremely jealous of, pretty much all cultures.
All cultures, yeah, because
I have my American culture to essentially celebrate 4th of July, Thanksgiving, Christmas.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have any family.
And we're not even that patriotic.
My family traditions, other than, you know, when I was younger, there were religious traditions.
Yeah.
But as far as my family traditions go, it's mainly just like Thanksgiving and Christmas is like what you do with the family. That's the only time the family got together, or birthdays.
Yeah.
Very American, not really denominationally specific. Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't Catholic, so we didn't even do those kind of traditions.
And Catholicism's just witchcraft. It's just witchcraft under the guise of... Don't make that face. It is all the fucking incense and the chanting and the blessing, the
that's
sacrament
the original
of
Christian religion, though.
Yeah,
that's all
it's
I'm
all
saying.
Stolen from Richard, but you know, yeah, I agree with you. Like, I mean, I have friends that know that their family came from, you know, like the Netherlands, so they take part in that sort of culture, right? Or like Jessie, she's got her Swiss culture. She's got her, you know, European Alpine culture. And she's got her family that she can trace back through Germany and Switzerland for, you know, a ways. Like, and she has that culture, that food, that decor, that lifestyle, right? But we didn't grow up with that. I didn't grow up with that. I grew up with rock and roll music, barbecue, and re-roofing houses at the age of 14. You know, there is no culture. And we have our traditions with our own kids, right? Because as a family, we were able to make our own traditions. Yeah. But there's still birthdays, holidays.
They're still very based off of the ones that we were already doing.
You know, and
we didn't start anything new, really.
And it would feel wildly inauthentic to, say, have a big Cinco de Mayo celebration or a big St. Patrick's Day celebration or anything, because we are not enough of any of those cultures to be
we don't participate really in a lot of that, and
then there's cultures that I love, like the Indian culture. You love Japanese culture. Our child fucking is obsessed with Chinese culture at the moment. Like, you know, we have so much respect and love for other cultures and their celebrations and their foods and their music, but you know, we can only take part in it so much before we're starting to look like posers or you know, it gets weirdly borderline slightly racist. So it does suck a little bit to not have a familiar culture that we get to be a part of, right? Because we are, like I said, we're all things and no things in terms of our blood. And I kind of want to do, one of those
like
genetic tests. But at the same time, I don't want the government to have my DNA these days, especially these fucking days. Oh, my God. Like, I do not trust the security of those data banks. But, you know, of my family that has done it, it's always just, oh, we're a mixture of everything and nothing. You know, I remember around last October on TikTok, there were a lot of white TikTokers going on and being like, I would like to make an ofrenda. I would like to set up a space to celebrate my ancestors, you know, for the Day of the Dead, but I am not Hispanic. Is it okay? And then there were Hispanic TikTokers that were coming up that were like, actually, yeah, it is okay. As long as you do it with respect and love, here's how you do it. And I kept seeing these videos and I kept being like, oh man, that's really fucking beautiful. And I would love to make an ofrenda for my grandparents, for your grandparents, for our aunts and uncles that we have lost, for our friends that we love that we have lost, to celebrate them. You know, I love the marigolds. I love the idea of the food and the alcohol that you present gifts to that your loved ones as a way of saying, please come visit me. Because that's all I want. I want to visit. You know, half of my family gets visits from my grandpa in their dreams, and that motherfucker has come and seen me like twice, and I don't even know if it was really him. I miss him, and I want him to come visit me in my wild-ass dreams, but he's never there. And before I start crying, because it's starting to perk at the back of my eyes, I would love to make an ofrenda for our family members. I would love to do it out of respect of not only the culture that it comes from, but for my loved ones that are gone. I just don't trust that producer Robin wouldn't fucking destroy it.
Nah.
So, which is another reason why I've never created an altar in this space, is because I'm just like, he would destroy it. He would be like Dante eating the food off of the...
He's already destroyed everything else I loved.
Yeah, so. Including the back of my neck. Yeah. So all of this to say, I would love to be able to partake in that one day and set up an ofrenda out of respect and love for the culture that it comes from and for, you know, my grandparents and my friends. Is Ernesto's betrayal on par with the prince from Frozen? Like, do we see that betrayal coming? Because we think the entire movie that Ernesto de la Cruz is Miguel's great-great-grandfather. And then you find out that, oh, he actually killed.
He was poisoned.
Yeah, that he actually killed Hector and he's not the grandfather. He's a betrayer.
Yeah.
Is that on par with Prince Hans?
Like, where you are introduced to a character that you believe is going to be like the
good
hero,
guy and the hero, and it turns out
that he's the villain.
What do you think is the more like? Because I remember watching Frozen, and when Hans turns out to be the betrayer, you're like,
gasp.
Do you think that Ernesto's
that's pretty on par? Like, yeah. I think part of me was like, something's fishy, but I don't know. I don't remember when I first watched this movie. Yeah. I don't remember when I caught on. It was probably before it was revealed to Miguel that I caught on, but it definitely wasn't immediate, and it probably took a while.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the Hans one was a good one.
I feel like the Hans one was the first, so it was a lot more shocking.
Sure, but I wasn't expecting it again.
No.
Especially from Pixar.
No, and so I feel like they are at least on par with each other. I remember seeing this movie in theater with you. I remember walking out of it devastated and crying, and then I think we went and got pho because it was a cold day and we were just like... But I don't remember how I felt about the actual betrayal when it happened. But as I was watching it this time around, I was like, I wonder.
One of my favorite shots in the movie.
Yeah.
Other than, obviously the big reveal of the afterlife and the city and the lights and the cable cars like moving around in the background. And then again later when they're on one of the cable cars and you're seeing everything them move through the city. It's all the imagery is amazing. And even the party at night, that whole celebration, everything
beautiful.
Happening over that party the whole movie's beautiful and it's hard to pick a really neat shot. But one of my favorite moments camera-wise, because we don't get much of this in animation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was during the scene when Hector and Miguel get to that kind of like, I guess it's like a village on a river or a bayou or something.
Yeah, where all like the unwanted souls or the forgotten souls are.
Before they meet the guy with the, where he gets his
Chicharron.
Chicharron. But
those aren't the lyrics. There's a child here.
But when they arrive, they're walking down the dock.
Yeah.
And the way the camera, almost as if there's a cameraman holding that camera, walking with them. But it's like kind of a one shot where the camera just stays on the characters as they walk down and like your surroundings are moving past you. And it becomes very three-dimensional walking through a town like that in an animated. You're used to it when you're playing a video game.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't happen very often in
animation. You don't get a lot of like tracking shots.
That
is a beautiful sequence. And I kind of love that that's where, that the Forgotten Souls have formed their own family, essentially. Everybody's auntie and uncle, everybody's cousin. And that's where they kind of go to have each other so that they're not alone until they're forgotten and they drift away.
Right.
Which is so sad.
Right.
And so beautiful. One last question for you.
Yeah.
I guess maybe a couple. First of all, I want to talk about music and the power of memory because, I think that they say that smell is the most powerful connection to memory. I feel like music's the second because sometimes you hear a song and you are immediately taken back to a time and a place. I can hear a big bad Voodoo Daddy song I like say their song, You Know You Wrong. And immediately I am back at a Big Bad Voodoo Daddy concert with my friend Jenny singing in that song in the pit, 5 feet from the stage, laughing and dancing and singing that song at each other. Mm. Or I can hear a Who song and imagine my dad in the backyard tinkering away on something with the smell of sawdust in the air. I can hear the Royal Crown of Thieves version of Beyond the Sea, and I see us dancing in our apartment after our tiny little wedding. And I love that about music. The fact that music is what brings Mama Coco back, right? Miguel playing Remember Me to his grandmother the way her dad used to.
Because she was not responding to anything else that was happening.
No, she was slipping away.
Yeah.
And in that moment, he brought her back to life, and he brought Hector back to life through her memory with music.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing. I wonder what songs our children will think. I kind of know what songs our eldest is going to think of when it comes to us, or me, right? Specifically, I know a couple songs that will forever be in their life because of us. But, music is a powerful memory conductor, and I love that. And speaking of music, what's your favorite song from Coco?
Remember Me. No, not that one.
For me, and again, it will be because of the memory of it, it's Un Poco Loco. What color is the sky? Ay, mi amor,
ay, mi amor. You tell me that it's red. Ay, mi amor. See, that is such a fun song.
It's such a fun song. But watching because our son watched it with us and watched Coco with us when we were watching it. And he, back in elementary school at one of the many, and I mean awful, I fucking hated going to elementary school kids like spring concerts.
Well, because you had to watch
all the classes.
Every class.
I know. And you're just like, I'm waiting for one.
Watch,
especially when our child's like in the fifth grade and
you have to get through
every single other
kindergarten
thing.
Kindergarten through fourth before you even get to your
kid. And you
kid.
Feel bad for sitting there making fun of like the kids to your partner or spouse. But like, it's the only way to entertain yourself to be like, oh, God,
you're like, look, this is the sixth year we've been here.
Yeah. We had to
we're
go
gonna
to
make
so
fun
many
of some
of
kids.
Oh God. They were all absolutely terrible. But nonetheless, his class, I think in fourth grade, sang that song. And then so while it was playing, and I'd forgotten that, but while it was playing on the movie, our kid pops up and starts singing along with it. Just watching him like bounce around the couch singing that song was so pure and sweet that it instantly became like, that's my favorite song from Coco. Like, that's the one I'm going to put on some soundtrack or a playlist. Like, that's the one for me.
I mean, Un Poco Loco is great. It's mainly because it represents like a perfect, like this is how much fun this kind of music can be. It's one of those songs, like mm-hmm. it's a perfect example about how great that music can be and how much fun it can be to celebrate and dance to. Was it Proud Corazon, the one that he was singing to, Chicharron?
Everyone knows Juanita. That's the song.
Okay. That makes more sense.
That's a really cute song for sure.
I mean,
The World Is Mi Familia is also a really cute song. And obviously Remember Me is the devastating.
It is a devastating song.
It's the devastation. You can't,
but it is a really good song.
Yeah.
And when they played it at,
the Hollywood Bowl,
they did the, cause it's different the way they arranged it was different than the movie, but it's really good.
We didn't talk about if Coco won any awards.
You're right. How did I skip that?
Yeah. Why don't we get that really fast and then we can shut it down, so to speak.
Well, of course, Coco won awards.
Yeah.
Two at the Oscars. One for Remember Me. A movie, Mudbound, had a song called Mighty River mm-hmm. performed by Mary J. Blige. I remember her performing it. I remember I watched this Oscars. Mystery of Love from Call Me By Your Name, which mm-hmm. By Sufjan Stevens, who I love as a artist, but we haven't watched Call Me By Your Name yet.
No, it's coming
so
up.
So we will
in one of the next 11 episodes.
So we will know what that song was
yeah.
when we watch that one. And Marshall, the movie Marshall, had one called Stand Up For Something. And The Greatest Showman was nominated for This Is Me.
I'm I'm really glad The Greatest Showman didn't get it, because This Is Me is a great song, but it has nothing on Remember Me. And I will go to my grave with the hard-held opinion that The Greatest Showman is a terrible film.
Man, people love it, though.
People fucking love that movie. But I, the entire time, I was like, why are we supporting this asshole? He sucks. But This Is Me, and then the song that Zendaya and fucking What's-His-Face sing together is divine. But those are only the two parts. That movie upsets me to my core. But, you know, people love it, so what are you going to do?
Of course, Coco won Best Animated Feature that year. It was up against The Boss Baby, The Breadwinner, Ferdinand, and Loving Vincent. Loving Vincent's the only one I think I recognize.
Loving Vincent was about Vincent Van Gogh.
Yeah.
I didn't see any of those except
Ferdinand,
for Coco.
Breadwinner. Yeah, Boss Baby, I didn't even bother
seeing.
Yeah,
no, fucking goddamn it. Boss Baby.
So, way to go, Coco.
That was one of the years that they were like, it's going to be Coco, but we can't nominate one film. So, I guess Boss Baby.
Boss Baby, I guess. It's like, really? There was nothing else? Michael Giacchino got a Saturn Award for Best Music.
Mm-hmm.
Coco also won a Saturn Award for Best Animated Film.
Wait, 2017? So, it'd be the 2018 Best Score Oscar 2018.
It got the BAFTA for Best Animated Feature
Film. Oh, went to The Shape of Water. Yeah.
What did?
The Best Original Music Score. Oh,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, Critics' Choice won Best Animated Feature and Best Song, Remember Me. It was a massive hit financially, critically, award-y.
Hmm. 112
awards.
Oh, good for them. Best Original Score that year went to The Shape of Water, Alexander Desplat. Also up for it was Dunkirk, Phantom Thread, The Last Jedi, and Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri. So
there were only 42 awards it didn't win.
Well,
but it won 112
because it was great.
It was great.
Coco, we love it.
Yeah, 5 stars.
Yeah, 5 stars. Absolutely. It's, you know, it is forever devastating, and I might not watch it that often. Like, it might be a movie I watch after someone dies. And
Jesus.
I know, right? Because I need to cry more. Dark. I don't see any point in my life that I am sitting around with 2 hours to kill, and I think to myself, I'm going to watch Coco.
It's the music, the imagery, the family.
Phenomenal film, head to toe.
But that's why you watch it again, because you want to just see that.
I don't want to.
You want to see that all.
Cry that hard.
No, it's worth it.
And then I'd rather kind of watch Encanto, because it's all kind of, it's not the same story, but it's very similar in terms of family and expectations and the music. Could you imagine if Lin-Manuel Miranda had his hand at Coco?
I mean, the music would definitely be different, but also still
good. It still would have been good, but I don't know.
It wouldn't have sounded the same. There probably would have been too many of his songs with his voice.
Yes.
They're not always fantastic.
No.
And his voice leading those songs isn't always my favorite.
No.
I would rather him just write the songs and somebody else perform them.
Well, like in the Encanto.
Like in the content. Yeah.
But anyways, 5 stars for Coco. We love it forever. Great job, Disney.
Amen. So, Maggie.
Yes, Caveman.
I have 2 questions for you.
Hit it. Oh my god, is this him playing banjo? Is this him playing the banjo? Ah! That's him playing the banjo, isn't it?
That was him playing the banjo, the classic guitar, and the drums.
That was all three of hymns?
It was all three recorded and then put on.
Where did you find that? Layered
on top of the internet. That is a little ad that he did for Brioni.
Oh, yeah. The
which is a clothing
brand. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's actually him. Are you sure that's him playing all three of those things?
Yeah. The video, he's in the ad, I've seen that video. He's doing all of it. Unless he was faking all of everything.
No, he's not. No, he like, learned.
He knows how to play guitar.
Yeah, and he learned how to play the banjo for the sign in.
So the
Sydney
only thing left
Barts
is hitting
window.
Some sticks yeah. like very softly just to keep the beat.
I love him so much. So, I was wondering as soon as you were about to hit that button, I was like, if he doesn't use Oscar singing, it's a lost opportunity. Or making some sort of music. Oh my god! He has talked about wanting to release an album, but being too busy with acting. And all of us are like, "Please release an album, Oscar! Please, because I have some of his songs on my phone from soundtracks and stuff." Inside Llewyn Davis, 10 years, fucking Sucker Punch. But like, I love him so much.
I think the man is acting.
So talented.
I think the man is acting while he can act.
Yeah.
And he's going to be another one of those actors who goes off and starts doing musical albums later in his career.
Why is Oscar Isaac not in a musical? Why has this man not been casted in a fucking musical or a Disney?
That's a good point. That's a good point. The man can sing. The man can dance.
He is so charming. He plays any instrument.
You think that would be
yeah.
something that he's in line to do? And maybe he is.
Oh, God. I would die. A happy death.
Or maybe somebody has approached him, but it wasn't the right musical that he wanted to do.
You know what? Maybe so, but like, give it to me. If he's not going to come back as Moon Knight.
Anyway, Maggie.
Yeah.
Would the presence of Oscar Isaac's voice have made the movie Coco a better film? I think the answer is fuck yeah.
Well, yeah, but he's not Mexican. He's Guatemalan.
No, and I get it.
And I think they hired a predominantly Mexican cast because the story does take place in Mexico. But even
fine, if you wanted to
and Guatemala also celebrate the Day of the Dead, so I guess I
completely understand if they wanted to keep it. This is taking place in Mexico. We're gonna have Mexican actors.
Yes,
I get it. But he could have nailed any one of those parts.
He could have nailed any one of those parts. Yes. So the answer is, I don't think it would have made the film better. But I would have loved to have had him there. You know, but I'm glad that they stuck to a predominantly Mexican cast. I think that that's a beautiful thing because they were celebrating Mexican culture, so they hired Mexican people to do it. So I don't think it would have made it better. It wouldn't have made me love the movie anymore. But yes, I would have loved to have heard him in it, especially singing. What character would he play? Ernesto de la Cruz. Nothing against Benjamin Bratt, but I think Oscar would have been so much fun in that role, and it would have been great to see him and Gael kind of, like, act off of each other. I don't think you could replace Hector and Gael at all. I think they're just perfect for each other. Nobody else really has as chunky or as meaty as a part in terms of the male voice actors, you know, because a lot of the female voice actors have bigger parts. Like Mama Imelda has a huge part. Yeah, I would have loved to have heard Oscar's take on Ernesto de la Cruz. I think that would have been a ton of fun. I would have loved hearing him do all of those like dumb lines from the movies that he's in, and the more like jazzed up, like funky version of Remember Me would have been divine. So yeah, that's a role I would have picked for sure. I think he would have been wonderful in it. But if they want to,
that's the wonderful thing about this podcast is we can put him in whichever film
I know,
we want.
Can we can there at any time at any age, but why can't we put him in a musical?
You can. in your dreams.
He needs to be in one in real life though. Why is that not happening? And that has been this week's episode of Movie Mingle on the wonderful film Coco, and we hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. Next week's episode is going to be so much fun because we get to watch Black Panther, motherfucker! I love going to Wakanda. I love that film. I love the whole cast. It's going to be just a lot of us gushing over what a great fucking film it is and crying about our loss of our beloved Chadwick Boseman. Oh god, I miss him so much. So yeah, it's gonna be a really fun episode, and we hope you turn in for that. As ever, you can follow us on Instagram, Threads, and Letterboxd at Movie Mingle Pod. You can write us at moviemingle@gmail.com, and you can find us on YouTube at Movie Mingle Podcast. And you know what, reach out to us guys, because we've been doing a lot of this and we love you and we love hearing from our fans. We've got 11 episodes left, which is insane to me. So insane to me. I can't believe we've made it this far, but I'm very proud of us, and thank you for being along on the journey. Please take care of yourselves until next week. Go out into this big wide world and share love and fun. And until next time, just remember me and go mingle. Bye.
Are you an effective team?
We are an effective team.
Let them fight.
How did you just do that?
I'm a really good lawyer.
Here on Caladan, we've ruled by air power and sea power. On Arrakis, we need to cultivate desert power.
Welcome, Mr. Beach. What's that bar? I'm a little confused.
Well, we wouldn't want that, would we?
I don't want to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you.
What is that?
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Toga. Toga. Toga.